Pamela Rutledge is our next speaker, CEO of Flourish Australia, which used to be called Richmond PRA. It's community-based support and employment for people with mental health issues in New South Wales, South East Queensland. In past lives, Pamela's been a social worker and was executive officer of the Richmond Inquiry. So you heard Eugene talking about the asylum. Some people disparagingly call them bins, in the bin in Stafford. We had plenty of bins. In fact, unfortunately, we've still got some. But the Richmond Inquiry in New South Wales was about deinstitutionalisation, was about taking people out of those institutions and treating them in the community. There is no reason for people to be in those institutions for a long period of time. They were incredibly harmful, and the Richmond Inquiry was about deinstitutionalisation. Interestingly, the results of the Richmond Inquiry were derailed by people in Treasury and Finance who assumed that they would save money by closing down the bins, like New South Wales Roselle, and putting people in the community. In fact, it is just as expensive. It's just better. And one of the things that we need to talk about and that Pamela has devoted her life to, Julian has talked about very movingly, and Eugene was referring to implicitly as well as explicitly, is this notion of recovery. It is not a one-way street, even though you might have serious and what people have previously called persistent mental illness. So recovery is an incredibly important element and is something that we do need to talk about. Please welcome Pamela Rutledge.
Thank you, Norman, and good morning. Thank you to the Institute for the invitation to be here. Our story is a lot of these issues at an organisational level. I too would like to acknowledge and thank Julian for the bravery and courage that he's involved in standing up and talking about what are very, very personal and intimate issues. And I'd like to acknowledge other people who are here today who may be living with a mental health issue and all those who have gone before us, because we know that the pain and suffering that people have experienced in the past, as Norman says, in very inhumane conditions, has greatly contributed to our understanding of what we need to do in this space now. So Flourish Australia is one of many large mental health service providers. We operate across New South Wales and South East Queensland at the moment through 65 different service sites with a diverse range of services ranging from residential programs, generally working with people who are in that low prevalence group and who have who are living, and many have lived for a long time with very severe psychoses, and some of the people we are working with are people indeed that I met during the Richmond Inquiry. Many of these people have been in hospital all these years. In one of our services in Tamworth, we work with people who have come out of and been able now to come out into the community after something like 20 or 30 years living in a large psychiatric institution. And they come and they get a tenancy and they reconnect with the community and they live the life that they have been denied for many years. We support about 5,000 people a year across those services. And the majority of our 1,000 staff are in frontline roles directly supporting people with a mental health issue. So from an insurance point of view, a workers' compensation point of view, we're in a high risk area. We are very actively seeking to be a mentally healthy workplace. And so it's about really walking the talk. If we believe and we know that, as Norman says, there is so much evidence around the world, I don't have time to go into it today, but about how people can and do recover from a mental health issue. And recovery doesn't mean being free of symptoms. Recovery means being able to manage and live with the symptoms and have support around you to to handle the points at which things may trigger an event and where things may get distressing or difficult. But being able to manage and live with the symptoms and live the life, we talk about people being able to live the optimal life, to have optimal mental health and well-being, which is really what all of us want, isn't it? And all of us really have a right to, especially in a strong and just society such as Australia. So we have staff, a strong focus on mental health in the workplace, and we encourage dialogue and provide a safe workplace. So over 52% of the people who work in our organisation identify as having a mental health issue. We actually use an old-fashioned affirmative action approach to employing people with a mental health issue. If two people apply for a job anywhere in our organisation, in IT, in HR, in management, in frontline services, if two people apply and they have equal qualifications and one of them has a mental health issue, that person will get a preference. And so we are an environment, a working environment, where people say to us at interview, I want to work here because I'm able to be my full self. I'm able to be authentic. I don't have to hide. I think it's a sad indictment on so many workplaces, and I've worked in many of them, that people do have to hide part of themselves from their employer because they can't talk about some of the issues that are really important to them or an important part of their life. As I said, we do know the evidence is absolutely strong that people can and do recover from a mental health issue, especially if they are supported before and immediately after an acute episode. So we have, as one of those, that great framework that Eugene put up, it's one of the protective factors we put in place when we, for all of our staff, people are able to negotiate and put in place a personal situation plan with their manager, which is entirely confidential, so that when someone is first employed and you can have a discussion about the mental health issue, it's a safe environment where people are encouraged and know that it's safe to disclose, and you put in place a plan that is about what do we do if we observe that something is happening for you, if we notice that you're becoming unwell or if you become distressed, who should we talk to, how should we manage that situation. And so we do have people for whom that is a preventive factor, that they can go to their manager and say, look, I'm not feeling so good, or their manager can say to them, look, I've noticed that the following is happening, I'm concerned about you, how can we help? Oh, I just talked about that. So, as I said, we have a commitment to employing people with a lived experience. We also have a very large number of peer workers. Peer workers are people who are employed in frontline roles to support other people with a mental health issue and who are expected and required to draw on their own lived experience as part of that work. This is, there is a lot of evidence about the value of peer workers as a point of engagement for people connecting with services and also in the workplace, having people who are there as peers that people can talk to. We have two important policy documents. Both of these are on our website and you're most welcome to look at them. Embracing Inclusion is about our commitment to being an employer of choice for people with a mental health issue, and our commitment to growing the peer workforce. And our Recovery Action Framework, I call our organisational glue. It's like our culture. It applies to everyone in the workplace, from the board right through to people at the front line, and It enunciates the three vital behaviours that our organisation commits to for the way we behave with each other and the way we behave with the people who access our services. Personal situation plans I've mentioned. They're not limited to people with a mental health issue. Anyone can, if someone is in a carer role for an older parent, they might want to negotiate a personal situation plan about how they manage that situation. It's about enabling people to bring their life issues into the workplace and manage it effectively. So, injury management in this situation is complex and challenging. So of our 1,000 employees, we average around 20 workers' compensation claims a year, and about 50% of those are claims for psychological injury. Our performance is, we understand, significantly below the scheme average, and so it's worth asking the question why. So I just put together from the basis of two different stories of what works and what hinders these good outcomes. So in the case of a situation of a young woman who became unwell when we were going through a lot of change around where her office was located, we were able to act quickly, and that person had a personal situation plan in place. We were able to work effectively with her and the treating professional. It was a correct diagnosis. We knew what her issue was, and she was able to stay at work while she recovered. In an alternative example, a person who had a situation at work which re-traumatised them after from an earlier trauma. In this situation, a claim was provisionally accepted so quickly that we were actually unable to go on engaging with the employee, and there was an incorrect diagnosis made. And the person was away from work and really discouraged from coming back into the workplace. So we know that that early treatment, intervention and engagement with the psychologically injured worker is essential for a successful return to work. And for us, it's about knowing our workforce so well that we really know where the points of potential problem may be, and we're able to intervene and help managers to really support workers in a way that may really prevent an injury occurring. So, our observations as an organisation that is seeking to make a difference in terms of addressing that huge underemployment of people with a mental health issue in our community, and create a positive environment for people to work. We know that the longer an employee is away from work, the less chance there is of a successful return to work, and that if we can keep people at work, it's much more effective. But there is some really adverse incentives in this system, and there is often the likelihood that a psychological claim will be accepted early, and that it can make the worker more unwell. It often has the impact or the consequence of making people feel disempowered, when where our focus is all about empowering people to address their own recovery and getting the support they need. There is often an issue about GPs who are, we work very closely with many, many GPs, but sometimes GPs are not the right person to diagnose a complex psychiatric issue. And there is an incentive built into the system for us to overuse, and we don't want to overuse what is Section 11A in order to really head off a workers' compensation claim when there's a performance management issue. So we really need much better ways of working around these issues so that that we're not in this really quite an artificial environment where we want to have a direct and genuine relationship with the injured employee and be able to work through the issues. So in conclusion, we are working as hard as we can to create a mentally healthy environment for people at work. We are really putting our money where our mouth is. We're walking the talk as a supporter provider to people with a mental health issue to ensure that we create an environment in our workplace that is matching and mirroring the sort of behaviour we want for people who we support. And workers' compensation can sometimes be working against us. Thank you.